My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's been a busy week for the president and the incoming and existing Congress. Let's start with the president's trip abroad, spent time in India, Indonesia. Now today he was in South Korea. What's the headline from the trip?
Well, part of me says the whole interruption of the meeting by Press Secretary Robert Gibbs on behalf of some American correspondents was newsworthy, but it was probably a 24-hour story, and that was that. Obviously, the president seeing his roots in Indonesia, the school where he spent his younger years, the neighborhood he lived in was very moving. Relationship with India is probably stronger. The president clearly has a good rapport with Prime Minister Singh and the ruling Congress Party. And India is a good place to have ties to, given the booming Indian tiger-like economy. Now, that said, what remains to be seen is how he will perform at the summit meeting in South Korea, where, among other things, he will meet with the economic powers of the world. Certainly that is extremely important. So far, I think the president had some good photo opportunities, meeting with Prime Minister Singh, meeting with U.S. troops in South Korea, and overall going back to his roots.
John, quickly following up on the Indian part of the trip, there's been some concern about how some of that was viewed in Pakistan, obviously a longtime rival and even enemy of India, with the president pushing for an Indian seat on the permanent UN Security Council. He also, of course, talked very highly of not only India, but said that Pakistan needed to come clean on what it knew about the Mumbai terror attacks. How will that visit impact our relationship with the Pakistanis, which is mixed at best, but still very critical given the war in Afghanistan?
It doesn't help. And remember, like it or not, whatever faults there are with Pakistan, Pakistan has been an ally of the United States in the war on terror and a key player. Perhaps the government may not be so stable and President Zardari leaves much to be desired. But the fact is, when one considers that the government could fall and an Islamic Republic, not unlike Iran, could come to power in Islamabad, one has to be very forgiving. The president at times acts unforgiving to our friends in Pakistan, and I think this is going to cause some problems. As to how severe they are, I'm not sure. It's a two-way street, and just as we need Pakistan, Pakistan needs the United States. So I say it's probably a wash.
John, let's move on to domestic issues now. Before we get to the leadership squabbles up on Capitol Hill, let's get to the initial recommendations. Many more still to come from this bipartisan debt commission, co-chaired by Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson. A lot of conservatives actually pleasantly surprised by some of the recommendations coming out, even though they don't love all of them. But there's more spending cuts and less tax increases than they initially feared. There's talk of a gas tax increase, but also a talk of extending the eligibility on Social Security a couple of years over the next few decades to help work over the deficit. What do you make of these early proposals?
Well, I think that people should watch a little more carefully when the news comes in from across the ocean. Britain has been forced to live, or will be forced to live, with major cuts in services and a tax increase in its value-added tax. France is having to see people work 2 years longer, something that set off major riots throughout the country. And Germany has been belt tightening for a while, and it's seen a 2.2% growth in its economy. And certainly we see Spain, Portugal, and Ireland in increasingly perilous situations. With the United States, the message from the Simpson-Bowles Commission is crystal clear. We've got to make the cuts, and we've got to do just what the European countries are doing. The only thing, of course, that gets conservatives nervous, and this is part of an age-old debate, is that along with making cuts, they want to raise more taxes and bring in more revenue. People like Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform remind us that when taxes are cut, particularly on those who create jobs, it puts more money into the economy, creates greater liquidity, and brings more revenue back to the coffers in Washington to pay off the debt. Trying to tax everyone to pay back debts has been tried before, and it just does not work. That will be the focus of the debate coming up. But I do see that those who want taxes cut might be getting an advantage. The administration is now signaling it will, for at least 2 years, let all of the Bush tax cuts continue.
Now, that has seems to be one of the concessions. Nobody's saying that officially at the White House, but all of the indications suggest that they are willing to make that accommodation. And as some have said in the last couple of days, as that has become more clear, elections have consequences. And some other elections are about to happen, leadership elections, with both parties on both sides of Capitol Hill. And most of the drama seems to be centered around the House Democrats, who obviously are about to lose power. Nancy Pelosi surprised a lot of people by saying she would run for minority leader, leaving a fierce battle for the number two spot between Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn, currently the majority leader and majority whip on the Democratic side. Both say they have the votes to win. Hoyer seems to be more credible as he makes that claim. What do you expect to happen here, John?
Well, first of all, Nancy Pelosi has certainly thrown a monkey wrench into the works by forcing colleagues to give her the leadership in the minority. This is the first time a Democratic speaker has gone on to be minority leader since Sam Rayburn in 1952. She is obviously aware of that precedent because when the Democrats roared back into power only 2 years later, Rayburn became speaker again and was once again a hero among the party faithful. It does not look as though the Democrats will roar back into taking the House in 2012 or any time soon, barring any unexpected circumstances. As for the other leadership position, Steny Hoyer expected to stay on as majority leader and Clyburn whip. Now they're forced to compete for the number two spot. My guess is that Hoyer has collected enough chits, is liked enough by the left in his party, that he'll be able to hold off Mr. Clyburn. But remember, Steny Hoyer is 70 years old. He won't be around forever. Jim Clyburn will have his day in the sun yet.
Very quickly on the House Republican side, it seems like all the key posts are uncontested at this point, and that's largely because the conference chair will be Jeb Hensarling. Michelle Bachmann dropped her challenge there. Any significance to the fact that she wasn't able to mount much of an effort?
Michelle Bachmann is a heroine to the Tea Partiers, probably having a status second only to Sarah Palin. And yet many of the Tea Partiers in the House, notably Paul Ryan, incoming chairman of the Budget Committee, and Ron Paul himself, weighed in for Jeb Hensarling, knowing that he was a fierce opponent of the TARP money, that he's an expert on the budget and on spending measures. In other words, his pedigree may seem establishment, but he sips from the same tea as they do, and he knows the House well. That was enough to say that young Miss Bachmann may get her day in court, but not this time.
Well, we'll be watching to see how all the leadership elections take place in the next few days here. John, as always, great to have you with us.
As I look forward to a new Congress and try to remember all the new faces, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America.